Take time for your life. Session 7, Your Spiritual Well-Being with Cheryl Richardson.
A program about improving the quality of your life would not be complete without looking at the ways that you honor your spiritual well-being. So many of us long for deeper meaning or a connection to something greater than ourselves. Some of us try to find this connection by enrolling in meditation classes or retreating to monasteries in search of ourselves, sanity, and the quiet moments that reconnect us to the faint voice of our soul. These methods may work, but they often wind up providing only a temporary solution, because once we're back in the rat race, we quickly lose the ability to hear our wise self, let alone maintain a constant connection to a spiritual way of life. In the beginning, I often encouraged clients to take time in their busy schedules to honor their spiritual well-being, to create some kind of a daily practice. But it didn't take me long to realize that expecting my clients to do this was setting them up to fail. When you already have a full plate, it can be very difficult to stick to a daily practice that will allow you to deepen your spiritual connection. Instead, I want you to know that you've already taken a very important step towards honoring your spiritual well-being. By doing things like practicing extreme self-care, getting your priorities straight by identifying what's personally important to you at this time in your life, eliminating the energy drains from your environment, your relationships, and getting your financial house in order, all of these kinds of things are great ways to begin honoring your soul. Even though it may not feel as though you're directly addressing your spiritual well-being by creating some kind of a daily practice, I want you to know that in fact you've already taken a very important step. So what does spiritual well-being mean to you? A sense of oneness with all that is? A relationship with God? A deep feeling of inner peace, or the faith to know that everything will always work out for the best? In my work as a coach, I've worked with people who share all different kinds of spiritual beliefs. Some honor their spiritual well-being within a religious context, and some of them honor their spiritual well-being in other ways. The important thing is that you begin to discover your personal and unique way to strengthen your connection with your wise self and ultimately strengthen your connection with the divine. In the beginning of my work with clients, I'll often ask them what spiritual well-being means to them. I often ask them to recall a spiritual experience in an effort to get a sense of what might be important to them in terms of listening to their soul. So I'd like to share with you some of the examples that I've heard. I was walking down the sidewalk towards the Colosseum in Rome. Suddenly, out of the blue, I had a profound sense of being loved and affirmed by God. I don't know where it came from, but it was intense and very real, a feeling of pure ecstasy. I was at the symphony, and when I heard the orchestra play a piece by Mozart, I was suddenly moved to tears. I couldn't stop crying. I felt like I was one with the music, and it lifted me to a higher place, a place where I felt deeply loved. When I watched my son being born, I suddenly understood, on a very deep level, what real love felt like. I felt myself connected to a force of love that I can't put into words. All I can say is that it was the most divine feeling I've ever had. When I visit my church each week and I sit in silence to pray, I feel connected to God on a very deep level, almost as if God is sitting right there with me, letting me know that everything is all right. One of the most profoundly spiritual experiences I've ever felt was when I visited Sai Baba in India. This man, this spiritual being, just emanated love. When I watched him walk among the crowd, gently touching the heads of the people around him, I felt my heart open. Although these specific situations differ, there's a common element in every spiritual story I've ever heard: a deep sense of love and connection to a powerful divine force. It affirms what I believe to be the most profound reason we're here: to learn to love ourselves and each other. To me, there is no greater calling. So when have you had a spiritual experience? How do you strengthen your connection to this divine power of love? How do you begin to hear your inner voice and connect more deeply to a greater force that connects us all? Well, I believe that you start by strengthening your connection to your wise self. Because to me, it's our connection to our wise self that opens up the channel to the divine. I think of my wise self as the vehicle through which the divine speaks to me. My inner wisdom, that inner voice, the faint voice of the soul that I spoke about earlier. When I get quiet in my life, or when I learn to consistently stop, take a deep breath, and check in, that inner voice gets louder and louder and louder. And pretty soon, it's my wise self that brings through the guidance and the messages and the lessons, the kind of information that always supports my highest good from the divine. It's strengthening the connection to our wise self that will allow us to begin to make choices and decisions that come from a higher place. It's about surrendering to a higher order, learning to stop, take a deep breath, and check in on a regular basis so that at some point in your life, it becomes your standard mode of operation, your default button, if you will. The most fundamental way to honor your spiritual well-being and step into the flow is to live a life based on your inner truth, your gut instinct, or your wise self. If you listen to the wisdom of your soul, if you pay attention and hear that voice, it will bring through the guidance that you need from the divine so that you can make the best choices for you in your life. So if you listen to the wisdom of your soul and take action, you will find yourself headed in a direction that always leads to your highest good. So what are some of the practical ways that we can begin to strengthen the connection to our wise self in order to receive guidance from the divine? Most of us remember a time when we had a gut instinct or a subtle feeling about a direction we should move in. And, of course, we all have stories of regret about not following this inner voice. I think it's important to pay attention to those times, whether we followed the direction or not, as a reminder that our wise self exists and is always pointing us in the right direction. We all make mistakes. We all listen in, get a sense of what it is we probably should do, head in the opposite direction, and then regret it later on. But the wisdom we can glean from that lesson is that there is this inner connection longing to guide us in the right direction. So one of the first steps is to begin to simply pay attention. Notice when your gut instinct was right on. Sometimes I recommend that clients ask for guidance out loud. When you come up against any kind of problem, challenge, or question about a direction that you should move in, stop, take a deep breath, and ask for guidance out loud. I remember a time when I did just that. I had just completed the proposal for my book, and I was sitting in my office wondering what to do next. I remember looking down at the manuscript and thinking, I'm clueless about where to go from here. So I stood up in the middle of my office and I said, Okay, God, if I'm meant to write this book, I need to know what to do next, and I'd like to know right now. Immediately, a woman's name popped into my head, a colleague and friend that I had known for quite some time. Now, the important thing about asking for guidance out loud is that you have to pay attention to the answer and then act. I immediately picked up the phone and called this woman. Her name was Maggie. When Maggie answered the phone, I explained to Maggie that I had just completed the proposal for my book and that I was unsure about which direction to head in. I told her that I stood up and asked for guidance out loud and got her name as an answer, and I wondered how she might help me. Maggie was silent for a moment and then sort of chuckled and said, You know, yesterday I was just speaking with an editor about your work. She was very interested in this whole field of coaching, and I think you might want to give her a call. She could probably take a look at your manuscript and help you to decide what to do next. So, once again, paying attention to the guidance that I got from the divine through Maggie, I picked up the phone and called this editor. She would go on to be my personal editor through the whole book project, the guiding force that allowed me to complete a lifelong dream. So this is the kind of direction you can get if you stop, take a deep breath, and ask for guidance out loud. I want you to know that you deserve to ask for what you need. There is a divine force waiting to support you. All you need to do is ask. I remember when I was studying yoga with a woman several years ago. She had made it her life's work to teach meditation throughout the country. I remember her telling me a story of how she needed to get up at 4 in the morning in order to teach her first class. And one night she went to bed very late and was worried about whether or not she would wake up. She said that she laid in bed, looked up, and simply asked God to be her alarm clock. She asked for guidance and said, "Please, please, make sure that I wake up on time." Sure enough, at 4 in the morning, she said that a poster over her bed had fallen and hit her on the head. It woke her up at precisely the time she needed to get up. I remember when she looked at me and said, "You can always ask for what you need. God is waiting to support your every desire." So, use the practical step of asking out loud for the guidance that you need. And then, most importantly, pay attention for the answers. Sometimes you'll get guidance like I did. Someone's name will pop into your head, a place that you need to go, a question you need to ask. Other times, you'll get that guidance through other people. You may find yourself pondering a direction or a question, show up for lunch with a friend, and in the middle of the conversation, your friend gives you the very answer that you needed. I've had clients who have gone to the post office to pick up their mail and have suddenly found precisely the piece of information they needed in order to move them forward in their life. Sometimes we get the answers through sensations in our body. For example, you might be asking for guidance about a relationship that you're involved with, and you begin to get certain feelings in your body that help you to determine whether or not this is a relationship that you should invest more deeply in. The important thing is to pay attention. Pay attention to what you hear. Pay attention to what you see. Pay attention to what you feel in your body. The answers are all around you. You just have to open your eyes, open your ears, and open your heart. Another important way to begin to realize that the divine is speaking to us all the time is to notice when you provide the divinely inspired answer. Also pay attention to the times when, during a conversation with someone, the person tells you that you just told them exactly what they needed to hear. So paying attention to not only when you get the divine guidance, but when you give it, will help to confirm that this power is available to you at all times. Another practical way to strengthen your connection to your wise self and to receive guidance from the divine is through journaling. You can use your journal to write about specific situations that are going on in your life, questions you might have. You can simply write out a question, stop, take a deep breath, and then start writing. Just keep writing and writing and writing, and often before you know it, something emerges, an answer, an insight, a direction to move in. The important thing is to begin to create an intentional relationship between you and the divine by using your wise self. As you start to do this, as you start to ask for guidance out loud, use your journal, and pay attention to the information you receive, you'll find that you'll consistently receive signs that you're on the right track, that there is this greater force that is always paying attention, always listening, always responding to what you need. Sometimes the signs that you get or the signals that you get that the divine is paying attention can be pretty amazing. As a young girl, I was brought up Catholic, and I loved some of the early rituals of the church. In particular, I loved using the rosary. I moved away from that practice in my adult years, and about a year ago, found myself wanting to pick it back up. I was having dinner with a friend of mine who happened to mention that she used rosary beads as part of her spiritual practice. I asked her to remind me about how to use them. She happened to have a card in her pocketbook that described how to pray the rosary. That was my first sign, although I didn't notice it. I took the card home and put it by my bed, and for about 4 or 5 months, it sat there. One day, I remember looking down at the card and thinking, you know, one of these days I really need to buy myself some rosary beads so that I can start practicing this. That morning, I got in my car and went to the post office. When I pulled up alongside the curb, which was on the driver's side, I opened my door to step out. I looked down and noticed that I had parked on top of a drainage grate. As I went to step out of the car, something shiny caught my eye. And when I looked closer, I could see a set of rosary beads sitting on a leaf over a hole in the grate. Instantly, I got the message. I reached down and picked up the most beautiful set of rosary beads I had ever seen. I immediately looked up and said thank you. These are the kinds of synchronistic events that will begin to occur as you start to strengthen your connection with your wise self and open to the divine. So remember, ask questions out loud, use your journal, and most important, pay attention to the answers you receive and take action. So what if you could receive the answers to the most important questions of your life simply by asking? When you make it a regular practice to check in, the guidance starts to flow. A daily spiritual practice is another great way to keep that connection open. So let's talk about how you could design your own spiritual practice, a personal way of connecting with the divine on a daily basis. Most of us, when we think about a daily spiritual practice, often think of things like meditation first, or prayer, or visiting a place of worship like a church or a temple. But it's important to create a spiritual practice that feels right to you, something that allows you to create your own personal relationship with the divine. Now that you have more space in your life, it's the perfect time to add or enhance a spiritual practice in your life. The way you honor your soul is a very personal choice. There is no right or wrong way. You want to make it personal and unique to fit your needs. So before we look at how you'll need to prepare and the variety of ways that you might honor your spiritual well-being, I'd like to share with you some of the various ways that my clients have honored their spiritual well-being. Mark loved the outdoors. He loved to run in warm weather, and he loved to ski in the winter. I remember Mark once said that he felt the closest to God when he was on the top of a mountain. When I told Mark that, in fact, this might be his spiritual practice, his way of connecting with the divine, he felt relieved. It was clear that Mark needed to do something related to nature in order to maintain a consistent spiritual practice. So Mark looked for ways to make his outdoor activities part of his spiritual practice. Often Mark would get up in the morning and go out for a run. While running, he'd recite a prayer over and over again as a mantra to the beat of his steps, giving himself permission to extend the idea of a spiritual practice out into the world, allowed him to connect with the divine on a more consistent basis. Jason, on the other hand, found that daily meditation was an important way for him to strengthen his connection to his wise self and the divine. So Jason created a sacred place in his home, chose a time that he could commit to, and each day spent time meditating in this sacred space. Deirdre, on the other hand, worked in a big city. She often complained of how hectic and frenzied her energy felt on the way to work. So I suggested to Deirdre that she use her subway ride into the city as a time of prayer, a time to close her eyes, take a deep breath, and turn inward. Deirdre tried this practice and found that it really helped her to prepare for work, helped her to arrive at work more centered and present, and also helped to strengthen her connection to the divine as well. So Mark loved the outdoors, Jason needed the indoors, and Deirdre found a way to honor her spiritual well-being on her way to work. What are some of the ways that you might honor your spiritual well-being on a daily basis? You might decide to dance. Remember, ancient cultures offered their dance to the gods as a way to honor the divine. Or you might decide to incorporate a spiritual practice with a visit to the gym, where you slow down and connect with your body as you go through the exercises. The important point is to expand your options. Look for a way to honor your spiritual well-being that works for you. So the first thing to think about is creating a sacred space. Where will you honor your spiritual well-being? Creating sacred space to honor your spiritual well-being means to decide on an actual location, the best time of day, and the right frequency for you. We're creating a discipline, a way of consistently connecting with the divine. The word discipline has often gotten a bad rap in our culture, but in fact, learning to become more disciplined in the way that we honor our soul can free us up. Discipline can become an ally, a way to establish a pattern or a routine that helps us to create a consistent practice. So you may want to find a place in your home that you can set aside for spiritual rejuvenation. It might be the corner of a room or a whole room itself. Some of you might decide to create that sacred space outdoors. There may be a park or a beach nearby where you find it much easier to connect with the divine. The kind of location doesn't matter. It's choosing a sacred place that will work for you. Once you've done that, I want you to consciously think about the best time for you to engage in your spiritual practice. Are you a morning person? Or would the end of the day be better? Some people might choose a time just before they go to bed. Again, choose the time that works best for you so that you can develop the consistency and the discipline to engage in a spiritual practice on a daily basis. By doing this, we strengthen the connection to our wise self and the divine and begin to create the kind of synchronistic events that allow our lives to flow. So once you've created a sacred space or you've chosen the location that you'll use to honor your spiritual well-being, and you've decided on the best time, then it's important to choose your own personal method of practice. You might decide that prayer is an important way for you to connect with the divine. Some people find that the quiet and peace they long for in more traditional places of worship is important, so you might decide to go to a church or a temple on a regular basis. You might decide to use your journal as a way to connect with the divine. One of my clients spent a year writing letters to God each day in her journal as a way to reawaken the relationship and strengthen her connection to God. Meditation may be your path, or you might choose to do what Mark did. On your daily jog, use that time to repeat a mantra over and over again. You can also try different approaches until you settle on one or more that feels right to you. Some people will choose a variety: meditation, prayer, writing in their journal, going to the gym, spending time in nature. Whatever works for you, give yourself permission to explore the many different ways that you can connect with the divine. The important thing is to create a disciplined daily practice. So now that you've designed a spiritual practice for yourself, it's important to also look at the ways that you feed and nurture your soul. What moves you? What feeds your soul and makes you feel deeply? Thomas More defines the soul as the part of us that wants a rich experience of life. I'd like you to think about what kind of rich experiences your soul needs. It might be great music, a spectacular sunset, or ecstatic dance. Or maybe it's those moments when things just seem to come together and you feel overwhelmed with gratitude. Start to pay attention to the things that give you chills, or the positive experiences that make the hair on the back of your neck stand up, or the kinds of things that move you to tears. Write these things down. These are the kinds of experiences that feed your soul. We all need soul food. When we feed our souls, we open ourselves to the experience of grace, a moment when time stands still and we can feel the divine presence enter our hearts and our minds. You may have had this experience of grace while driving down the street, a moment where tears spring to your eyes and you feel overwhelmed with gratitude, almost as though it came from out of the blue. These are the kinds of moments that we need in order to really care for our souls in a loving way. So what are some of the things that you can do to feed your soul? Sometimes it's the things that move us physically and emotionally. For example, clients have talked about going to the theater to see a play and in the middle of it having this strong emotional reaction that stirs them on a deep level. I remember one client talked about having that experience while dancing to African music. She said that she felt lifted off the ground, as though this was the place she belonged on a regular basis. These are the kinds of events that we often save for special occasions, going to the theater, traveling to a sacred place. But our souls need this kind of food on a more regular basis. Don't wait for the once-a-year or twice-a-year gift that you give yourself. Instead, stop right now and ask yourself, what does your soul need? So what are the kinds of things that will feed your soul? Is there a certain theater performance you'd like to attend? Maybe there's some kind of an event at a museum, an art showing, that would move you deeply. It might be as simple as giving yourself the gift of a new CD with music that touches you. Or some people find that their soul is fed and nurtured through service and contribution. The important thing is to give yourself this gift more than once or twice a year. Begin to see that soul food is a necessary part of a spiritual diet. We can also feed our soul in little ways. Purchasing a bird feeder and putting it up outside an office window can really help tap into that part of us that wants a rich experience. I know that for me, having fresh flowers in my office and in my home on a weekly basis feeds my soul like nothing else. You might spend an afternoon gardening. Giving yourself the gift of being amongst the plants and working with the earth can be a great way to nurture your soul. These may seem like strange examples of soul food, but you'd be surprised at how many people long for the opportunity to enjoy these simple things. Someone once said that the senses are the gateway to the soul. Sensual things can also feed and nurture your soul. Making love to powerful music. Sleeping on luxurious sheets. Wearing silk or velvet next to your skin. These are more of the more sensual ways that we can feed and nurture our soul. I remember one time John Travolta said, "Why have tea out of a mug when instead you could choose a beautiful antique teacup?" These are the kinds of sensual things that can nurture us and feed our souls in positive ways. You might decide to light candles during the day or fill your room with the sensuous smells of aromatherapy. Or you might engage in deep spiritual conversations with others in order to feed your soul. What's important is for you to determine the special things that you can do to feed and nurture your soul. As a matter of fact, take out your journal and make a list of those things, the kinds of things that you long to do, the kinds of little things that you never seem to have time to do. By now, you should find that you have more time. The last thing I'd like to say about honoring your spiritual well-being is to make the care of your spiritual well-being a priority by taking time out regularly for a soul retreat. How many times have you wished that you could take a sabbatical or some time off to reconsider your life in some way? Taking a regular retreat for your soul is an important way to not only honor your spirit, but to reevaluate your life on a regular basis. This retreat for the soul is a requirement for creating an authentic life. Give yourself the gift of a period of time, at least once a year, preferably more, where you'll go away, get quiet, and listen for what your soul wants next. You might choose a certain time of year to take your retreat. It might be around your birthday, or around the time that the seasons change. Some clients take this retreat around the beginning of the year as a way to prepare themselves for the year to come. Some clients have taken a vision quest of sorts as a way to honor their soul and retreat from their busy world. The important thing is to schedule this retreat. I'd like you to stop right now and consider the kind of retreat you might take for your soul. Where would it be? How long would it be? What do you need to do in order to prepare for this retreat? How will you use this retreat? And most importantly, when will you do it? If taking a retreat for your soul feels impossible, make sure that you use your partner for support. Ask them to help you uncover what might be standing in your way, and then have them brainstorm with you about ways to overcome any obstacles. If money is the issue, go back to the financial part of this program, and it will help you to create the financial resources you need to make this retreat a priority. So here's the fieldwork I'd like you to do. First of all, I'd like you to design your spiritual practice. Take the time to choose your sacred place, determine the best time, and the method that you'll use to honor your spiritual well-being. Secondly, I'd like you to make this practice consistent. Choose a regular time that will allow you to honor this commitment. If every day feels like too much at this point, then make it every other day. If every other day feels like too much, then make it once a week. The important thing is to choose a consistent practice that you can invest in, so that you make it easy for you to keep the commitment and build on your success. And the last piece of fieldwork I'd like you to do is to revisit the list of ways that we created earlier, feed and nurture your soul. Pick one and schedule it. When you live your life based on your inner wisdom, your wise self, you come to realize that the life you thought you wanted was only the beginning. A divine power takes over, and as you listen to and act on your inner wisdom, you're guided to a life that honors your highest good, an authentic life. Now that you've put a spiritual practice in place that allows you to honor your spiritual well-being and feed and nurture your soul, make it your number one priority. As you've taken the time to make your spiritual well-being a top priority, not only will you find that your life begins to work more effortlessly, but most importantly, you'll find that you become a calmer, more loving presence in the world. And it's from this place that you make your best choices. And when we make our choices from a deep and loving place, we make the kind of choices that honor the world we live in. So as you've taken time for your life and consistently practiced extreme self-care, you've become a powerful contribution to the world.
We continue with Session 8, Celebrate Your Success, with Cheryl Richardson.
As you come to the end of this program, you've probably realized that taking time for your life has much less to do with managing your schedule better or taking an occasional day off. Instead, it has a lot more to do with building a strong foundation that allows you to make the kinds of choices that will honor your true priorities. I'd like to congratulate you for the work that you've done throughout this program. At this point, as you spend your time and energy on what really matters, you've probably begun to notice that the quality of your outer life has improved dramatically, as well as the quality of your inner life. By taking full responsibility for the choices that you make, you've found the key to true security, the kind of security that comes from having abundance in all areas of your life, time, energy, community, spiritual well-being, as well as financial abundance. You began this program by learning to practice extreme self-care, by learning to slow down and check in with how you feel before you make decisions. You've been able to use the filter of extreme self-care to help you make healthy choices. You've also learned to relax more, to get your energy from a natural source instead of adrenaline, coffee, or sugar. You've started to get your priorities straight by creating your absolute yes list and keeping it around you. You've begun to remind yourself of what's most important to you. And then, by eliminating the energy drains, whether it had to do with your physical health or your environment, whether in your home or office, you've freed up energy and begun to make more space in your life for your new priorities. And you've begun to handle the biggest obstacle of all, feeling trapped by money. As you've invested in your financial health, you've found that you begin to have more freedom about the decisions that you make. And most importantly, you've invested time in your relationships and your spiritual well-being, creating a deeper connection to others and to your wise self and the divine. So now I'd like you to celebrate your success. I'd like you to stop and begin to look at how your life has changed, both on the outside and the inside. Too often, those of us who take action and achieve what we set out to do move from one accomplishment to the next without stopping in between to notice how our lives have changed. I'd like you to stop and take notice. As you think about the life that you're living now, notice. Do you have more time for the things that you want to do? Do you feel more relaxed and peaceful? Have friends or family commented that you're easier to be around or that you seem happier? Have you noticed that you have fewer conflicts or frustrations in your life? Do you wake up most mornings with a smile on your face? Do you have more money? Or has your physical health improved in some way? These are the kinds of examples, the kinds of changes that I want you to look for in your life. I also want you to look inside. Do you feel more confident, more secure about the choices that you make? Do you find that your connection to your wise self and the divine has strengthened over time? These are the kinds of changes that occur as we invest in the quality of our life, as we take the time to build a strong foundation. As you consider these questions, I'd like you to make a list of 10 things you're most proud of. It might be ways that you've grown on the inside, or it might be goals that you've accomplished on the outside. Once you make this list, it gives you a perfect opportunity to get together with your coaching partner to celebrate your success. Don't leave this step out. Learning to incorporate the practice of celebrating our success along the way is an important way to honor your extreme self-care. I'd also like you to think about how you reward yourself for all your hard work. Usually, in working with clients, I encourage them to stop along the way and reward themselves as they grow and change their lives. Sometimes a client will reward themselves by giving themselves a gift, a symbol of their success or a symbol of a way that they've grown. I remember one client in particular, his name was Peter. And one of the ways that Peter had grown was that he had developed a tremendous amount of courage. Peter had made some major changes in his life. He needed to end a significant relationship in order to move forward, and he even changed his geographical location. Peter bought himself a statue of a lion, a beautiful lion, as a symbol of the courage that he had developed within himself while making these changes. Some clients will give themselves the gift of a trip that they've always wanted to take. Sometimes it's to a resort or a spa to just relax for a week. Other times it might be a sacred place, a place for them to go and honor their soul. What will you do to reward yourself? So once you complete your list of the 10 things you're most proud of, and you determine how you'll reward yourself, I'd like you to share this list and this reward with your partner. Along with that, I'd like you both to make a promise to each other, a promise to reward yourself for the hard work you've completed. I'd also like you to take the time to really celebrate the partnership, to acknowledge each other for the gift of support and commitment that you've shared. This partnership has been one of the most important ingredients to your success, that has allowed you to make positive changes in your life. So use this time of celebration as a way to really honor each other and to deepen your connection, to acknowledge each other for the gift of support and commitment that you've shared, and to thank each other for the support and encouragement you've received along the way. Make sure that you extend this practice of rewarding yourself into your everyday life. Sometimes it can be as simple as completing a task throughout the day, a difficult or challenging task, and giving yourself the gift of dinner with a friend, or reading a favorite book, or going to a movie. Or you might reward yourself on a weekly basis for a project that's completed at work. Look for ways to acknowledge who you are in an effort to strengthen the connection with yourself and honor your extreme self-care. As your coach, I want you to revisit this process over time to deepen the work that we've done together. Change is constant, and you'll need to revisit this program from time to time in order to continue honoring your priorities. By now, you've probably noticed that your level of sensitivity has been raised, and you no longer can tolerate the kind of stress and anxiety that you had when you began this program. But there will be plenty of situations in life that will challenge your desire to practice extreme self-care. I'd like to offer you some early warning signals so that you can begin to notice quickly where you might need to refocus your energy or your time in an effort to get back on track. Pay attention to the times that you begin to feel stress in your body, tightness in your neck and shoulders, or just a looming sense of anxiety. Or notice when you start to use external stimulants again, like coffee or sugar. Or notice when you start to pick up junk food again, a quick fix instead of a healthy diet. If you start to experience memory loss, you know, you search all over the house for your keys, you can't find them anywhere, and you suddenly discover they're right in your hand, that's a clue that you might be headed off track. Pay attention to your sleep patterns. If you wake up in the middle of the night with thoughts racing in your head, once again, that might be an indication that life is getting a little out of hand. And certainly, if you find yourself rushing around from one appointment to the next and feeling stressed out, or becoming more irritable, particularly with the people that you love, and doing things like yelling at the dog, once again, that's a really good sign that you're about to step off the path of extreme self-care back into the craziness of life. And most importantly, pay attention to your wise self, the inner voice that will always lead you in the right direction. It'll tap you on the shoulder to get your attention and gently remind you that you need to practice extreme self-care. So if you find yourself stepping off the path of extreme self-care, I'd like to offer you a quality of life checklist that will help you get back on track. So if you find yourself getting caught up in the rat race again, or feeling overwhelmed or frustrated with your life, simply ask yourself the following questions to determine where you need to get back on track. Am I taking extremely good care of myself? Do I take time out of my schedule every week just for me? If not, go back to the extreme self-care part of the program and revisit the steps. Have I updated my absolute yes list in the last 3 months, and does my schedule reflect these priorities? If not, schedule time in your calendar right now to go back and revisit your absolute yes list, and notice which action is preventing you from honoring these priorities. Am I tolerating any person, place, or thing that is draining my energy? If so, get to work on handling that energy drain right away. Am I living well within my means, saving consistently and investing wisely? If money is still a source of frustration for you, simply go back to the financial part of this program and begin taking action to invest in your financial health. Am I strengthening my soulful connections with the important relationships in my life? Stop for a moment and ask yourself, is there any relationship in my life that needs my attention? If so, schedule a time to get together with that person and talk about how you might strengthen your relationship. And finally, am I consistent with my spiritual practice, listening to and acting on the wisdom of my wise self and a divine power? If not, make the time in your daily schedule to honor your spiritual well-being. Remember, that's the foundation of an authentic life. As you continue to use this quality of life checklist to go back and work the program when necessary, you join a growing number of people who are strengthening their character and contributing to the world in a powerful way. You've probably noticed that your desire and ability to contribute to others has grown with each step along the way. A strong desire to contribute is an automatic response to a full, rich life. You've developed the characteristics that allow you to live a truly authentic life. You've probably noticed a willingness to take full responsibility for everything that happens in your life. You've increased your level of integrity, and you have a desire to continuously raise the bar. You've begun to understand that you're a part of a greater whole and that every action you take matters. Your commitment to serve others has grown, and you've developed an enormous capacity for love and compassion. As you consider these characteristics, you can begin to see how the work that you've done has had an enormous impact, not only on your life, but in the lives of those around you. By investing in yourself, by taking time for your life, you've made your own unique contribution to the world. Make sure you take the time to stop and acknowledge the person you've become. This is a really important step to honoring yourself. Don't just stop and say, "Yeah, okay, I congratulate myself," and move on to the next thing. Really stop and take in this important investment you've made in yourself. It's when we take the time to do this, to really acknowledge ourselves fully, that we give ourselves the gift of a deeper motivation to continue to live an authentic life by honoring what really matters to us. Before we end this program, I just want to address some of the common questions that may come up for you while doing the work. So here's some of the questions that I've heard in the past. What happens if I don't complete the field work? Well, remember, coaching is all about action. It's about doing things differently in your life. I would say that the field work is the most important part of this program. It's what you do in your life that matters the most. So take your time. If you find that you get stuck in a particular part of the field work, make sure that you ask your partner for support. It's most important that you keep putting one foot in front of the other. Don't worry about how quickly you do the field work. Care more about whether or not you do it. What if I want to do this program with a group instead of a partner? Doing the work throughout this program with a group is another great way to stay motivated and on track. Just make sure that you choose people that are able to commit to completing the program together. Because you'll be dealing with more than one person, you might want to consider these three things when working with a group. First of all, you may want to keep the group size small so that each of you have a chance to share in the process. Usually 4 to 6 people is a pretty good size. You'll want to meet on a regular basis, and because there are more people involved, it might mean that you meet monthly instead of weekly. And most importantly, be sure that the commitment level is shared by all. Make sure you share your expectations ahead of time to ensure that you all share the same level of commitment. What if I can't come up with 5 priorities when I'm creating my absolute yes list? Or what if I have too many? Well, first of all, don't worry if you can't come up with 5 priorities. It's perfectly fine to choose 3 or 4 or 2. Once again, use your partner for support and just think about the areas of your life that need your attention. If there's only 2 areas at this time that are personally important to you, that's perfectly fine. If the problem is that you have too many priorities, I do recommend that you cut it back to 5. Having too many priorities is part of the problem. We end up spreading ourselves too thin. So as you look at your list, ask yourself, what are the most important priorities on this list, and choose the items that need your attention the most. Limit it to 5, knowing that at the end of 3 months, you'll be able to revisit the list again. I know that it can be difficult to limit your priorities. Many of us want to be involved in a lot of different things. But remember, you'll have a better chance of making changes in your life if you limit the amount of areas that you focus your energy on. Do I have to do this program in order? Well, I do recommend that you listen to the introduction and the parts of the program that have to do with extreme self-care and getting your priorities straight. These are the areas that provide a strong foundation for our work together. After that, you might decide that your financial health needs the most attention, and it's perfectly fine to go to that part of the program and begin your work there. Or if you feel exhausted, as if your energy is being drained, then you might want to go to that part of the program that will help you begin to eliminate the energy drains so that you have more energy to do the work. The important thing is to choose the area that's causing you the most stress, the area that needs your attention, so that you can begin to alleviate some of the feelings of overwhelm that might prevent you from continuing on with the program. So what if I begin the program and there aren't any coincidences or synchronistic events that occur in my life? Usually when this happens, it can be an indication that we're not paying attention. It's important to really take a careful look at the kinds of changes that begin to occur in your life. Sometimes we're looking for the changes that we want to happen, and because of that, we end up missing some really terrific changes that happen in other areas of our life. Don't worry. Every client I've ever worked with, at some point or another, begins to feel the positive impact of the changes they're making in their life. For some people, it shows up as divine coincidences or synchronistic events, an improved state of well-being, or the strengthening of a relationship. The important thing is to just begin to notice the positive changes that are occurring in your life. How do I deal with feelings of guilt that don't seem to want to go away? Well, remember, I said earlier in the program that guilt can be good. The amount of guilt you feel is often related to the amount of care that you give to others before yourself. So sometimes it feels as though the guilt will never disappear. But eventually it does, because you'll notice as you practice extreme self-care and honor your priorities, you're able to begin to be there for people in a much better way. But if the guilt doesn't seem to go away, if you continuously feel guilty or bad about yourself, you might want to get the support of a therapist to help you work through some of the emotional issues that may be coming up as a result of putting yourself on the top of your to-do list. What if I get stuck and can't do the field work, or I do the steps and my life doesn't seem to get better? Well, sometimes this might be an indication that therapy is the answer. It's important to look at what might be getting in your way. So sometimes the support of an experienced, licensed therapist can help you to deal with the feelings or emotional issues. There are other times where a therapist would actually be a better form of support for you than a coach, to help you continue with the program. For example, if you find that you have a deeper issue with a spouse or a loved one, the support of a therapist may be necessary in order to deal with that difficulty. Certainly, if you're suffering from depression or any kind of addiction, again, it'll be really important for you to get the support of a therapist to help you deal with the emotional issues that might prevent you from taking action. Anytime you feel stuck or unable to do the field work, that can be an indication that there are some emotional issues that are coming up that would better be dealt with in therapy. So give yourself the gift of that support when necessary. We've talked a lot about action during the program, but what kinds of feelings might come up for me as I go about completing the work? Well, certainly there'll be times where you feel energized and excited about the changes that are happening in your life. There are other times where you'll feel a sense of sadness or loss at the things that you're leaving behind. For example, you might decide to clean out your basement of all the old stuff that you've held onto for years. But during that process, you'll need to grieve the loss of certain things that no longer belong in your life. Also, it's not uncommon for clients to feel as though their emotional selves need to catch up with the changes they've made in their lives. For example, you might decide to change careers during this process and land the job of your dreams, and notice that you feel a sense of sadness as you let go of the things of your past. The same thing might happen as you start to have great things enter your life, like more money or a new relationship. Although these may be the kinds of things that you've wanted to bring into your life, you may also experience a period of sadness as you make a transition from being single to suddenly being part of a couple, or from a job that you no longer wanted to be at to a new job. These kinds of transitions often bring a period of grief or loss with them. And sometimes, as we make major changes in our lives, it can feel as though our emotional selves need to catch up with the new person we've become. For example, you might be shifting careers and entering into a field that allows you to express your creative talents and gifts. And when you find yourself in your new job, you may feel a sense of anxiety or insecurity, which simply means that your emotional self hasn't quite fully stepped in to the new you. These kinds of feelings are a normal part of the process. Sometimes you might hit a wall. You might feel stuck as though you can't take the next step. This can be an indication that you need to slow down, go easy on yourself, and return to practicing extreme self-care. Remember, it's important that this process honors who you are, not overwhelms you. So as you experience the emotional process of going through this program, be sure and share the emotional process with your partner. That kind of support will help to make the journey much easier. And if at any time you feel like you come up against an emotional issue that's too difficult for you to deal with, please get the support of a therapist. How will my relationships be affected by the work that I'm doing? This is an important question. Many times clients will tell me that as they begin to make changes in their life, their friends or family members wonder what they're doing. For example, you can't just walk into your home and start clearing out the clutter without explaining to your husband or your wife or your family what's going on. Sometimes it can be frustrating because our friends or our family member are not able to share the enthusiasm and the excitement that we feel as we go about improving the quality of our lives. And certainly, there'll be times where you may actually outgrow certain relationships in your life as you raise the standards for how you live. Being aware of the ways that your relationships might be affected is an important first step. Be gentle with yourself and be gentle with the people that are closest to you in your life. Let them know what you're doing. You can always invite them to be a part of the process, but be respectful. Recognize that we each have our own timing and that the time may not be right for them to do the kind of work that you're doing. Make sure, once again, that you use your partner for support. And if any deeper relationship issues emerge while doing this work, be sure and get the guidance of a therapist. People often ask me about the quality of my own life. They assume that because I've created this program and done the work, that my life is perfectly balanced. Well, I'd be the first to admit that I teach what I have to learn. I developed the Take Time for Your Life program because I had no time for my life. The quality of my life has definitely improved over the last 5 years. As a matter of fact, when I look back to 5 years ago, I feel like a completely different person. I've strengthened the foundation of my life so that some of the things that used to create problems for me years ago are no longer problems now. But let's face it, life is constantly changing, and I'm always going back and revisiting this work and taking it to a deeper level in my own life. There are certain inner and outer changes that have stayed with me over the course of the work that I've done. For example, it's much easier for me to say no and to set boundaries today than it was a year ago, 3 years ago, or 5 years ago. But then there are times where certain situations will show up in my life that challenge me once again to say no on a deeper level or to set a boundary in a whole new way. I find that now I have much less patience and tolerance for the kinds of things that drain my energy, like clutter. I keep things very simple at home and in my office. I make a point to go through my stuff every 3 months and clear out what I no longer need. That kind of change happened gradually over time. Remember, I used to be a pack rat. Today, I live a much more simplified life because I need to do that in order to do the work that I most want to do. Today, I have more tools to respond to life when life gets challenging. For example, I can feel in my body when I start to reach a certain level of stress, and I simply open my calendar and make decisions about what to let go of. I find that my level of sensitivity for stress and anxiety has been heightened dramatically. I know that my extreme self-care is the foundational piece that must be put in place in order for me to do my best work and to be the kind of woman that I want to be. And finally, most important of all, I can honestly say that 9 times out of 10, I find myself turning to God for the guidance and the direction I need when moving forward in my life. So over time, I've definitely grown. The quality of my life has improved. But I also know that it's a process. I know it's important for me to be vigilant about practicing extreme self-care. That really has become my filter for the choices and the decisions I make in my life. I simply stop and ask myself, what would be taking extremely good care of myself in this moment? And I'm sure I'll need to keep asking myself that question for the rest of my life. So let the practice of extreme self-care be your most important tool in leading you to your authentic life. Simply start where you are. Do what you can, and remember that each little step brings you closer and closer to living a life that honors your true priorities. A life where time no longer feels like an enemy, but instead feels like a powerful ally that allows you to do what you most want to do.
This concludes Take Time for Your Life with Cheryl Richardson. Music from Rhythms of the Chakras by Glenn Velez, available through Sounds True. For more information about coaching or workshops with Cheryl Richardson, please write her at P.O. Box 13, Newburyport, Massachusetts, 01950, or visit her website at www.cherylrichardson.com. Or email her, cheryl@cherylrichardson.com. To order additional copies of this audio learning program or to receive a free catalog of over 400 transformational audio and video tapes, please call Sounds True, 800-333-9185, or write the Sounds True catalog, P.O. Box 8010, Boulder, Colorado, 80306. You can also visit us on the World Wide Web at www.soundstrue.com. Thank you for listening.